It took me a long time to figure that out, honestly. So I'm glad that we're able to just like put that knowledge out there now for people that are getting into this, where they can just like skip a couple records of terrible low end.
This is the Self-Recording Band Podcast, the show where we help you make exciting records on your own, wherever you are, DIY style. Let's go. Hello and welcome to the Self-Recording Band Podcast. I am your host, Benedict Hein, and I'm here with my amazing Canadian co-host, Malcolm Owen Flood. How are you?
Hello, I am good. Thank you.
It's kind of a shame that after like 11 episodes, I still didn't come up with another adjective other than Canadian. Amazing and Canadian. I'll come up with something eventually. But like,
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
I'm not offended by that at all, though. That works for me.
Okay, that's cool. That's great. So you're having a great time there still, despite quarantine.
Yes, actually, I have gotten some like kind of distractions built up. I built a small little deck platform yesterday. Or no, I guess that was two days ago now. You know, you lose track of the days in quarantine. But I built a little deck on our, we got like a great view at our place here. So I've got like a little spot to go hang out now and just hang out in the sun. So that was cool. And that was fun to build as well. So yeah, things are awesome, man. I'm doing well. Also, I had a couple of people reach out to me from listening to the podcast and asking me questions and saying that they like the podcast and stuff. So that's really awesome to be hearing from you guys. Want to encourage anybody that is listening to do that, you know, reach out to us. If there's obviously the Self-Recording Band, you can join that Facebook community, but also we're just two people. You can talk to us as well. I'm pretty easy to find online. Malcolm Owen Flood. You type that in anywhere. I'm the only person with my name. I'm pretty positive. Nobody's got a name that long other than me. Instagram, Facebook, find us. And then Benedict, he's super visible on there too.
Yeah, absolutely. Just as Malcolm said, find us, contact us. We're always happy to help. Might take us a day or two to get back to DMs and stuff, but we'll try to help and answer everything. And we just love to chat. Honestly, not just give advice, but just chat. And yeah, absolutely do that. We love to hear from you. So yeah, and also I think I am also the only one with my name except for, and that's kind of weird actually, because it's not a too common name as well, but there is another audio guy, but he's a film audio guy, I think. Because
oh really?
Yeah, because I was Googling myself, as we all probably have done at one point. And I found a profile somewhere of some audio guy, and I thought maybe that's a profile that I made and I just didn't remember. But then I saw he does all movie related things, and I'm not that person, but there seems to be another. Yeah, that's not
me. Is he like doing some big movies?
Yeah, I would love to, but
yeah, you could poach his career.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't look into his credits actually. I don't know if he does big things, but he's like, yeah, movie audio guy.
I hope one day he finds this podcast.
Oh, that would be awesome. That would be amazing. Yeah. So, what are we talking about today, Marco?
Today we are talking about low-end bass guitars.
Awesome. And we are talking about the fact that bass is not only low-end, actually.
Yes, that is the whole point.
Yeah, because it might sound a little weird at first, because when most people think of bass, they think of the low end, of low frequencies, of like the foundation of the whole sound. And that's, of course, part of what a bass guitar does. But if you're not talking about bass in the sense of the part of the frequency spectrum, but about the instrument, the bass guitar, it's much more than that. It has various functions in an arrangement and a mix. And depending on the sound you're playing, depending on the genre trying to capture, you will, there are certain things you can do to make the bass work and to make your song benefit from having the bass guitar in there. And it's not just the low end, and that's what we're going to touch on today, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, like, I've had a couple conversations with bassists in the studio where they just haven't understood why I'm focusing on the treble and mid-range of the bass guitar tone we're trying to dial in. Like, it sounds bassy. I'm like, yeah, but that's not enough. That's not going to do it. Oh, my dog's coming in again here, but.
Never mind.
Yeah, no. So it's this interesting thing, I think, where to me, if a bass guitar doesn't have the proper mid-range and treble, the low end, the actual bass part of it, almost sounds pillowy and soft and like unusable. It's like just kind of this big mess. And it's actually the other side of the bass, the treble and the mid-range, that give the shape to that low end. So you can have all of this fat bottom end, that like all the like yeah fat bottom end that you want, but without that mid-range to shape the like appearance and delivery of that, it's useless.
Absolutely. It's kind of, and even if it's very loud, it kind of is invisible in a way. It's kind of overpowering everything, but at the same time kind of invisible or inaudible, really.
Mm-hmm.
You just notice that there's a rumble there, but you don't really, it's not defined and everything. And it, I mean, there are exceptions, certain genres where this might work, or if you have, what can I think of here, like maybe if you, but not really, but if you, maybe something like reggae or something, there might be some genres that have a really low thick bass that doesn't have to be so defined. But in most like rock and pop genres, you don't want the bass to sound like that. And part of the reason is that you want to make the fundamental note audible and clear, because the bass functions as kind of a, when you have a chord progression, the bass kind of leads you through that, and it makes sure that there's always this fundamental note there. And the chords and harmonies and melodies on top of that, they all, like, you have more freedom to do other stuff around this fundamental note. If there's just one element there that is just consistent and that gives you that note and that fundamental, that chord progression. And that's part of what the bass does. And you want to make that audible, not only in the very low end, but in a range where it's actually really audible and where you can't tell the notes from each other easily, because in the very low end, it's hard for our ears and brain to really tell the pitch, the note. And so that's part of it. And I kind of refer to that as an anchor. Like I perceive mm-hmm. it that way. Like when there's a bass guitar that's just solid and I can hear every note clearly, and it's just I just know where we're at in the song. I just get the chord progression better if it's there. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And I know a lot of bass players hate just having to play the roots, and you don't always have to play the roots, but that anchor you're setting, like something kind of has to do that job, and usually it's the bass. And it like without that, the like emotional delivery of the song just doesn't kick. Like if you drop into the chorus and it's like all of a sudden meant to just like drop into this low emotional kind of chord or something like that, without that anchor that you're talking about, it just doesn't connect.
Yeah, that's a very good example that you just said there. Sometimes bass players put in some really great creative licks and stuff that might be great on their own, but sometimes they just don't work if it's the transition into a new part, and when the first note is not there because they're up on the scale somewhere, like up on the fretboard doing some weird things, and this note, the first one, is just missing, the whole part kind of falls apart, and the whole mm-hmm. Entry into that part just doesn't work. So yeah, absolutely. I always need that to be there to, yeah, this anchor. And like as you said, it's not a bad thing that a bassist, or it's not like it doesn't make the bass any less important if you just quote unquote play the roots. It's a very, very important function in the whole arrangement mm-hmm. and the mix, and it's actually not too easy to do as well. Like it's not that everybody can do that, or it's like. Because some people think it's a very easy job, or it's like not as important, but it's not. It's hard to do if you want to do it right, and you are serving the song and the band a lot if you do that. So we have to say that, because some bassists, I think, they feel weird if they only play like the roots.
Yeah, they feel like they're not doing enough, but that's just the opposite is true. You know, they're like they're the one like showing restraint to serve the song, and that is so important.
Absolutely. So yeah, also I think that what I said about making it audible is if you only consider the bass a low-end instrument, if you only think about the very low end, you run into other problems as well, because as soon as you play the song on smaller speakers, in extreme cases like a phone or a laptop speakers, or even like not so great stereo systems or headphones, the headphones maybe not so much, but like small speaker systems, you won't be able to reproduce the lowest octave properly, and you might lose the bass completely if mm-hmm. you don't have any like mid-range information there. If you're just focusing on the low end, you might hear that in your studio or in your headphones and you think it sounds great and thick and everything, but if you remove that subwoofer or if you take off the headphones, the bass is gone basically, and then you lose that root and this anchor once again, right?
Hey friend, this is Benedict from the selfrecordingband.com, and if you are producing your own songs, I have a question for you. Do you ever listen to your music and feel like something is just off? Maybe the drums sound weak, or the guitar tone bothers you, maybe the vocals don't really cut through the mix, or the whole thing just doesn't sound finished and professional, but you can't really put your finger on it? I know you want to release big, punchy, professional sounding songs, right? The type of authentic, unique art that connects with your audience on a deep level. But you're just not sure what's missing with your recordings. Somehow you just can't connect all the dots. And I get it, the amount of things to learn and all the conflicting information out there can be really overwhelming. Especially if you're a lone wolf trying to figure it all out on your own, right? Now here's the good news. Whether you've been self-recording for years, or you're just setting up your first home studio, I want to offer you my personal one-on-one help. As long as you are determined to put in the work, I'm offering a limited amount of free one-on-one coaching calls with me. On this hour-long call, we'll dive deep into your recordings and create a personalized roadmap for you to finally solve the issues you're struggling with so that you can release music that you'll be proud of forever. If you are ready to see and believe that it's actually possible to achieve your goals and make the records you've always wanted to make, then go to theselfrecordingband.com/call and apply for one of my limited coaching spots. I can assure you that making exciting and successful DIY records is very doable. We've done it, lots of other people have done it, you can do it as well. Talk soon. theselfrecordingband.com/call.
Yeah, it took me a long time to figure that out, honestly. So I'm glad that we're able to just like put that knowledge out there now for people that are getting into this, where they can just like skip a couple records of terrible low end and realize that most people listen to music on little earbuds or on phone speakers and stuff like that. And if you don't figure out how to mix your bass and record your bass, or is really what it comes down to, recording your bass tone with like a proper mid-range, essentially, it'll just disappear on devices like phones or little earbuds that aren't very good, because they just can't accurately reproduce this really sub frequencies that are all you've put in your bass tone. So you have to have that mid-range for it to translate and show up on those devices, which is what most people listen on.
Absolutely. So true. And another thing is like our brains are really fascinating, because there is an effect that happens when we hear mid-range and overtones off a bass sound. So we have the fundamental note, which is very low down, the very low end. And above that, depending on the tone that we dialed in, we have overtones. If the tone is more saturated, a little driven, or if there's a lot of mid-range, it's not just the octaves to that fundamental note, which is all the same notes, just an octave mm-hmm. above, but there's all sorts of harmonics in between that add up and make up the whole bass tone. And the more you drive it, the more of those harmonics you get. And the thing about our brains is there's something called the missing fundamental effect. So if we give our brain an overtone series without the actual fundamental, so if you're playing a low E and the fundamental E is not there on a smaller speaker system because it can't reproduce the lowest octave, then the fundamental is not there. But our brains still hear a clear E, and we kind of add that missing fundamental into what we hear, even if it's not there. So we can actually hear it, even if it's not there. And that's pretty wild. So just hearing the overtones gives our brain enough information to imply and imagine the absent fundamental. And that's why we can hear bass lines and identify the notes on small speakers. as long as the overtones are there. And if they're not there and the fundamental is missing, then basically everything's missing. And so we need that dense overtone series to rebuild that bass tone. And then it actually sounds like a low, deep, fat bass, even on small speakers, because our brain just adds this fundamental to it.
So by adding mid-range and treble, you get more bass.
Exactly. Exactly. Because
that's awesome.
We've learned. Yeah, that's awesome. Because our brains have learned what a bass with its a bass tone or a note in general with its fundamentals sounds like. And if everything's there, just the fundamental that is not there, then our brain can still recreate that. And that's fascinating. So yeah, with adding a lot more mid-range and treble and or distortion, we can get the fundamental back on smaller systems.
Right. Yeah, of course. It's not only just like the sonic aspect of it where like frequency wise that it's important to have that, because having that mid-range to your bass also affects how it relates to groove and like the, and feel of the song as well in a huge way. Now that's kind of where the line gets a little blurry, because like you said with reggae, maybe having a little less of that growl is going to like only make the bass guitar mesh with the kick drum and not like the snare kind of thing. But in rock and pop, like you said, it's more important to have this like more broadband bass sound, because it's going to really jive with all the other elements that are going on. For rock in particular, having that like growling mid-range is going to really dig in with the snare, and it's going to like just make the guitars go 100% better. That wasn't very articulate, but what I'm trying to say is that guitars don't sound good without a good bass tone.
Yes, they are one, basically. When you listen to a record and you hear really huge guitars, oftentimes that's the result of the combination of guitars and bass, actually. Mm-hmm. And so, guitars need the bass oftentimes in rock. And the groove and feel of the song is also, usually you don't play just one long note in every bar, but you play a pattern, you play a groove, right? And you play either with your fingers or your pick, but it will make an attack sound, a click sound or whatever. And that is not in the low end. And the way you play, the feel, you can make a song sound a little rushed or a little laid back. It's a very important part of the whole groove, and the bass and the drums together are creating the groove. And then the picking pattern of the guitars is added to that. So bass is really much more than just the low end. It can also be almost a percussive element depending on how you play it. Mm-hmm. And that all takes part in that all happens in the mid-range, basically, because the low end is more, as you described it, this rather undefined but like soft, round bass kind of tone. And above that is the definition and the percussive elements and the groove stuff. And that's important. And if we don't have that, the guitars sound a little weak. And as you said, the snare just feels better if it goes along with the groove and the bass really well. So absolutely, it's not just the weight of a track, it's also the groove and a part of the guitar tone.
Yeah. And when you go back to thinking about speakers moving, if you have this big bass sound that's going to push the entire speaker, you know, it's going to send all this energy forward, that's obviously going to have a result in how we perceive the music. And one more thing to say here is that bass is like one of the hardest things to track, at least in my opinion, to track the way I want to hear bass. It's like a painstaking process. And I spend a lot of time on making sure it's perfect, because if you don't, the recording's just not going to stand up.
Absolutely.
I think people think bass is the easiest, but I think they're totally backwards on that.
I absolutely agree, because if it's not consistent enough, you will you will have that feeling all the time that there's suddenly like a hole in the arrangement, or that the energy goes away, or that like something's always off. If the bass is not consistent enough, it just has to be there. And also, and that's another thing on our list here that we've prepared, it sets the tuning reference point for the song. And that makes it also so difficult to track, and that makes it also so important to get right. Because sometimes, I don't know if you've experienced that, Malcolm, but sometimes if you listen to a song and you think the guitars or maybe the vocals even are a bit off, and you think like there's an intonation problem in the vocals, or maybe a chord is not right, and maybe the guitarist bended a little too much or whatever. And then you solo all the tracks and try to find the mistakes, and then you find out that it's actually the bass that's wrong, and it makes everything else sound out of tune.
Yeah, that can definitely happen. Yeah. I mean, like, it goes back to it being the anchor, right? So that anchor has to be placed correctly, else you're anchored in the wrong spot.
Yeah, sure. So it's the tuning reference of the song or for the song, and that makes it so important, and that makes it also hard to track, as you said. Yeah, it's you can't just underestimate the importance of the whole instrument, basically, and all the functions that it has. And along with that comes also the danger that even if you get that, and if you say, okay, it's not only low end, I need mid-range to make it cut through. I need the treble to get the attack and the groove. And I need to make sure it's the anchor's always there. The danger is that bass is also, because of all those things, the potential to mask almost everything else, because it happens across the entire frequency range without maybe the very upper, like top end. But from the very low end to the upper mid-range, bass is everywhere, basically. And if you try to make it really audible and you try to get the anchor thing right and you try to make it sound big and thick and everything, you have to be careful to do it with intention and to really think about the whole arrangement and how everything goes together, because bass can really also mask everything else. And sometimes I had it that I listened to a song and I found that the vocal was buried, and usually you think, okay, the guitars might be too loud or the cymbals or whatever. But sometimes the bass completely buries or masks the vocal because it's also in the center of the image usually. And it's a fine line here, and difficult.
It really
to
is.
Yeah,
I'm glad you mentioned that, because really the part that like the bass is actually playing is more important than really anything. Because if you have the wrong part and you do all this work to make the bass sound massive and full range, it's actually going to be a negative. You'd rather have the bass not be audible because it's going to eat everything. A bass is going to sound way bigger than a guitar and take up way more space. So if it's doing something that is busier than your guitar part, the guitar is gone. Everything's gone, kind of thing. So you have to really be careful that the part is right. And that's why so much of the time we're encouraging the part to be kind of simplified or driven around the roots, because that's already going to sound big. It's already going to take up a lot of space.
Yeah, and you're going to surf the song and the riff and everything so much more if you do that, and it makes your role even more important. And again, bass players sometimes feel like they have to do a lot to kind of justify their role in the band or in the arrangement, but it's not the case. And you actually take away from the overall energy of and size of the mix and the song and everything if you do too much. So that's just something you have to get comfortable with. And I think part of the reason is that many, at least in my experience, many bass players are guitarists who were at some point forced to play bass or decided to play bass because they think, okay, I can play the guitar, so I could probably also play bass, which is not the case by default. It's not the same thing. Of course, you know how a fretboard works and like everything, but it's a different role and you got to think differently. You don't want to pick as much. You don't want to do all the things a guitarist would do. You don't want to pick all the fast. You don't want to do all the fast patterns and picking stuff and strumming that a guitar does. And if you do, as you said, you will probably overpower everything. And that's part of the reason of this, I think, that many people think of the guitar, of the bass, as if they were playing a guitar, right?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Should we give a couple actionable, like just like a few of our favorite actionable techniques, do you think? Just be like, here's a couple things you could try.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We should do that. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. First one, try the part with a pick. And this is like something I insist on always. Almost always. I mean, like if they're like one of these Flea types who are using all four fingers to do this roll, and it's like, and they're slapping and stuff. You know, that's a different conversation. But 9 times out of 10, that's not the song I'm doing. Actually, that's never been the song I'm doing. So I get them to play it the way they normally play it, and then I give them a pick and say, play it again, and then we listen. And one of them's going to be an obvious winner. And in rock, it's usually the pick. Just a heads up, guys. It's normally the pick, but it's not always. But that test is worth doing 100% of the time. It transforms the tone of the bass. It's going to give it a lot more mid-range and attack, which is generally a good thing if you're doing rock music, for example, because you want that attack to be punchy with the kick drum and your guitars or whatever the part is written around. But I would always test pick versus non-pick.
Yes, I would do the test every time. There are definitely genres where fingerstyle bass is absolutely the right decision and the right thing to do. But I guess some people just do one thing or the other just because they are used to that, and it's hard to learn a new skill, basically, and they just stick to what they are used to. And if you had bass lessons, for example, and you learn how to play classic fingerstyle bass, you might be afraid to switch to a pick. And if you are a guitarist and you play with a pick all the time, all your life, you might not even think about playing with your fingers. But it's worth doing the test and looking at other bass players as well in your genre or in the bands that you look up to, and see what they do, and then find out what works best for your arrangement. Because it's not just a matter of personal preference, but it actually makes a huge difference in sound, mm-hmm. and can totally change the whole feel of a song. And you might not even know that you are doing the quote-unquote wrong thing for your band for a long time, maybe. So
yeah, totally.
Totally worth it.
Another one is play hard. Okay. I find that basses respond really well to being hit hard, be that your fingers or pick. You have to be really careful with the tuning, as we mentioned already. But there's like something about the power a bass can have if it's really smacked well.
Oh yeah, the clank,
you get, it just sounds like somebody's hitting a big piano chord with a stick or something, you know. that's what the bass tone I'm generally looking for. You'll also find that once you kind of settle in on that approach, it's easier to keep it consistent and get even bass notes, because bass is really susceptible to, if you hit it like soft and then loud kind of thing, like the bass, the low end changes like the kind of feel of it, and it just disappears, and you won't get this consistent like kind of bottom end glue effect across your song.
Yes, sure, absolutely. And all of that only matters, by the way, if you're using used strings. I can't say that enough.
Oh, yeah.
In every episode that's about stringed instruments, we have to say that you got to use used strings, because it's so important.
Yeah, totally.
Because all of that is irrelevant if you don't do that. You won't get the piano tone. You won't get the grit. You won't get the clank. None of that. You won't get the solid low end if you don't have new strings. So
if we're on episode 12, guys, if you don't know the new strings thing yet, it's time to quit.
And even if you are not into that piano tone thing or the clarity or the grit and everything, it's still worth playing with new strings, because you can always cut the high end and just leave the lower mid range and the bottom in. But that will also be much clearer, much more defined, bigger, everything. The tuning will be better. So it's not just for those people who like a really bright bass tone, it's for everybody.
Totally. Yeah. You can take a bright bass tone and make it dull.
Yeah.
That's possible. You cannot do it the other way around.
Yeah. Or if you want to go for, like, if you're into like kind of a more mellow, like darker or softer, like Motown bass tone or something like that, you can always play with your fingers and use flat wound strings or something like that. But as long as they're new, they're not going to sound like a bright piano. But they're all got to sound in tune, and they'll have all the overtones necessary. They'll have the bass, the fundamental and everything. And they'll choose a different material and play with your fingers, and it won't be too bright, but use new strings.
Totally. Yeah, the overtones are really the magic that happen with new strings on a bass. It just really brings out, like, it transforms the instrument, really. And the tone knob, that's another way I'll get a dark bass tone. Like, maybe I'm still using a pick, or maybe I'm using fingers, but it's new strings and probably a bright tone, but I'm rolling the tone off and just kind of like smoothing it out kind of thing that way. Like, I think a good tip for dialing in bass tones while you're recording is start with finding a good full range tone and then work backwards to the spot you're looking for.
Oh, yeah. Do you find yourself doing that often, like roll off the high end? Because more often than not, I find myself having all the knobs maxed out on the bass. I rarely use the EQ on bass. I always try, but like I rarely do it.
No, I rarely do as well. But it does happen sometimes, you know, where like, because when it happens is when it's somebody that normally plays with fingers and the music should be a little more mellow, but I'm finding that I'm getting a way more solid performance with the pick. I'll get them on the pick and then try and make the tone a little bit more like their finger style kind of thing, perhaps.
Oh, yeah.
If the song calls for it. So that's when I'm doing it. But even then, generally, I find it easier to just like use a plug-in and not even commit it that way. Just roll off some high-end in the monitoring and then we can figure it out in the mix from there kind of thing. But I'm tracking a pretty solid bass tone. And guitars, I don't know how I'm on guitars now, but yeah, all the knobs are full.
yeah, absolutely. And also, I'm always, that might be stupid, but I'm also always a little afraid that the bass player might touch the knob accidentally and that it won't stay where it is. Like
they do.
When you make sure it's just full on, like you can't make a mistake. So
yeah, no, it's so funny. They can't resist touching the knobs.
Yes.
Like even when they're full, I'm like, that sounds different. Did you turn your volume down? Oh, you did. Why?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
it's so funny. But I think it's just a habit fidgeting thing.
Yeah. And as you said, even if I'm going for a darker tone, I just roll it off in an EQ in the mix or whatever. Like even like sometimes for indie rock songs or something, you might want a little duller, more mellow tone sometimes. But you can. Yeah. That's easy to do, and it's still important that the harmonics and everything are there. Yeah, even in the lower mid range, not only the bright stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, one more actionable little tip, trick. I would call this one a trick. Grab a piece of paper towel or something like that, fold it over a few times, and slide it under any of the strings you're not using for that riff. If you're recording just like a couple bars at a time or something, and you're only on one string, get rid of all the other strings. And mute them out with that paper towel. I just like slide it right between the pickup and the strings usually. And that will get rid of them resonating or you accidentally kind of hitting them and really focus all of the sound you're capturing onto what's actually being played. Even if you're not hitting them, they still just seem to make noise and have like these little overtone ringing characteristics, like no matter how clean you play it. So if you mute them out, it really focuses in on the harmonics of the note you're actually playing. And the tuning also just gets clearer as well.
Wow, that's a great one. That's a great tip. Yeah, do that. Nothing to add to that.
Do that on guitars as well. Yeah.
Sure. Absolutely. I want to ask you something. What do you think? I mean, I'm sure you have experienced that and you said it even in the beginning, I think. But what do you think why bassists or people in general do tend to scoop out the mid-range on their amps and just focus on the low end and maybe a little of the attack on the high end? Some of them do that. They have this kind of smiley curve EQ on their amps that I see a lot. Right. Like when people come with amps with like graphic EQs on them, I often see the smiley curve. They just don't seem to like mid-range much. What do you think is the reason for that?
I think it's because when you listen to a good mix, like a song that you really like, you associate the mid-range with the guitars. Mm. So when they separate it in their head, they don't think that part of that sound is on the bass, when reality it is.
Yeah.
So I think it's really just this like illusion that's created where it seems like the guitars are covering that, but really the bass is doing a lot of the heavy lifting. That's my theory. What about you?
Yeah, I think so as well. And I think maybe another thing is that if you are standing in front of your amp on your own alone, and you're dialing in a tone, it might sound massive if you scoop out the mids because you hear all the low end and you hear the attack. Yeah. And so you think you have definition and everything. And it just sounds huge. And the mids might sound a little boxy or make it smaller like to you. Like they sound maybe a little cheap or a little... It just sounds more expensive and more massive if you get rid of the mid-range. But if you put that into an arrangement, into a mix, it just disappears. It's the same with guitars sometimes. Sometimes with high gain tones, people... they crank the low end at the top on the guitar EQ and they get rid of all the mids. And that might sound massive if you're standing in front of your amp, but in the mix or on stage, the guitars just disappear. And with the with the bass, I think it's the same. I think they are afraid it sounds too wimpy or too boxy if they have the mid range in there. So maybe that's part of the reason.
I think you're right. But yeah, if everybody, both the guitarist and the bass player, are cutting out their mids, then now your band doesn't have anything filling in the mids, right? Like it's a big problem, and it's so common.
it's pretty common. It is.
Totally. You know, it's a funny thing that I don't think everybody's like this.
No.
But I've noticed that recently, not even recently, quite a while now, I tend to have dirtier bass sounds than my guitars are dirty. Like, my guitars are actually cleaner than my bass a lot of the time, and people think my guitars are dirty, but it's the illusion. Like, my bass are just disgusting.
Yeah, bass has the potential to sound much more gnarly than guitars. And I try to think of why that is. And I often refer to it as the bass is kind of the teeth of the guitars. Also in heavier genres where the guitars are actually distorted a lot. But still, I think that guitars, when you play chords, there it's a lot of strings distorted pretty much. So you have a very dense, just a very dense signal. Like everything is covered like this. And it sounds kind of smooth for that reason, because there are no holes in the spectrum in the mid-range, because the guitar, guitar chord basically covers the whole spectrum, basically the whole mid-range. Whereas a single string on a bass, if you distort that and you don't distort it too heavily, you have a clear note still. You don't have as dense overtones, because it's just one string and it's overtones and it's harmonics. And that can sound a little more gritty. It's not too, it doesn't sound as polished. It doesn't sound as dense. And you hear the distortion as hair or teeth, and they just cut through this dense wall that the guitars are. I don't know how to describe it. You got to hear it. Maybe it makes sense what I'm saying here. So sometimes very aggressively distorted guitars can sound pretty smooth, actually. And then when the gnarly distorted or slightly driven bass comes in, it kind of breaks that wall and cuts through and gives it the teeth and the aggression that the guitars might have lost to the heavy compression and everything that happens from the heavy distortion, right?
Yeah, I get that for sure. I mean, if anybody wants to see how massive a bass can sound, like, check out the band Royal Blood. I'm sure most people have probably heard them. They're pretty successful now. I mean, I think they've always been successful, but they're pretty big. And I mean, their bass tones are freaking crazy aggressive. And like, I don't think I've ever heard a guitar sound like that. You know, guitars need to move over and kind of like just make melody happen and make like the chords, because they're obviously a guitar is going to be. Has the ability to have voicings, so they can kind of shape emotionally what's going on, but they can leave some room for the bass to, like you said, be the teeth.
Sure. Yeah, and I think that slightly driving a bass, you don't have to overly distort it, but slightly driving a bass is very much required almost in many of the modern genres, not only in heavy music, because it just increases it just brings out the mid-range, it adds these overtones, and even if it's not a clearly audible distortion, it just makes the bass cut through more, and it adds mid-range without adding EQ. So that's another actionable maybe that you can try, though, if you have a tube amp or if you have some pedal or something you can use to slightly saturate the bass, and maybe you want to do that in parallel, or you want to use like a DI box, split the signal into a clean bass DI that you can use for a clean full low end, and then you have the amp signal and you record both simultaneously so that you can make the amp signal a little dirtier. It's worth experimenting with that, even if you're not doing heavy music, just because when you push the mid-range with an EQ, you are always making certain notes louder, because every note is like every frequency is related to a certain note. And if you increase a certain frequency with an EQ, that note that belongs to that frequency, that root, will get louder. And so some of the notes in your patterns, in your licks and everything, might stick out a little bit. And if you use drive or saturation, you're going to increase all of the overtones for every note that you play. So the balance between the notes that you're playing will stay the same, but you have more mid-range now.
Right. That's- Right.
So that might be worth it. Instead of trying to boost too much EQ, just slightly driving it might bring it out and might add the mid-range in a pleasant way.
Mm-hmm. And then that little bit of driving also does like a little bit of a weird compression thing where you end up with a more consistent performance as well. The dynamics are more locked in a little bit, which is so important for bass. We keep driving that home, like consistency.
Consistency, absolutely.
Quick thing to say, to mention though, I don't recommend playing a bass through a guitar amp. Or guitar speakers, I should say. Guitar speakers aren't meant to handle bass. So just don't do that, or at least not very long or not very loud, unless you're okay with them breaking.
Yeah, do you mean a guitar cabinet with a bass amp?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or really just that guitar speakers aren't meant to reproduce bass.
Yeah. And also the power input they can handle is usually lower than...
Yes, yeah.
So totally. You might have a 300 or 500 or whatever watts bass head, and your guitar cabinet might be able to handle 150 or whatever, and then might just not work
totally. If you're kind of like now thinking, oh okay, I need to make sure I get the bass right, the number one most important thing you can do is use new strings. No. But record a DI. Like if you record a solid DI, which is really easy to do, you don't even have to dial in a tone. You just have to like use a good bass that's intonated with new strings and play it well. You've covered it. You're going to send it to somebody like Benny here to mix it, and he's going to have what he needs to make a great bass tone happen. I would prioritize a DI over an amp sound with a bass, where I wouldn't with a guitar. I think I would prioritize getting a great guitar sound, and then the DI is like a bonus, necessary but a bonus. With a bass, that DI should be your first priority.
I think
in my
so.
Mind,
if I don't have an amp but I have a DI, I can't do everything basically. If the DI is great, if I only have the amp signal and it doesn't really fit the song, I'm kind of trapped. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and most people don't have more than one bass amp, so the chance of you having the perfect bass amp for your song is just really small, guys. Like, so the DI is going to like really leave that more open-ended for whoever's mixing your album.
Sure, absolutely. And also maybe one more actionable thing here is it's always worth thinking about the arrangement. And in the bass, in the case of bass here, it's worth thinking about the relationship between the kick, the bass, and the guitars. And I would think of it in two ways. The first way is, where do you actually play the stuff on the bass? So is it very... do you play the root notes and you play it in the lowest octave? Or are you playing up on the neck most of the time, like, and you're playing more guitar-like, which can be the case in some songs? So is the fundamental frequency and the fundamental note, is it like very low or is it higher up? Are you tuning low or are you not tuning low? Like some stuff like that. I would always take that into consideration. And maybe you don't need as much low it because you don't play these low notes anyways in that song. Or maybe you only play those low notes, then you have to make sure they are there, but you have to also make sure you get enough drive or enough mid-range to make them audible.
Yep.
Like what you actually play impacts a lot of like the tone decisions, right? And it all goes together. You can't say there's one bass tone no matter what you're playing. There might be one bass tone for that one song, and for another song, another tone might be more suitable. And then also the relationship with the guitar and kick drum, because if you're playing higher up all the time, you want to make sure that the low end is filled in with the kick drum. You want to have a full kick drum. If you play very low notes and you want to have the bass sound very massive and fill out the subs, then you might want to put your kick drum... You want to tune your kick drum a little higher up and make it more punchy and not so sub-heavy, because that will also mask the bass. So bass tone is not about the bass guitar on its own, but it's always in a relationship to other elements. So a very subby bass tone will conflict with a very subby bass drum. And also if you have low-tuned guitars and you want to have the guitars, the low end, you want to keep as much of the low end of the guitars as possible, you will have to find a way to kind of get the bass around that. So you might want to have the lowest octave, then you want to carve out a little of the the upper bass to make space for the guitars. And then you may want to make sure that you have a lot of mid-range to make this very low bass audible again. And it's always, what I'm trying to say is always think of the big picture and the relationship to all the other elements, because bass tone does only work together with everything else and not on its own.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that kind of really sums it up well, because we're talking about like these kind of like what people would consider bright bass tones being like kind of ideal in most situations. And it's not because they sound good on their own, it's because they sound good with everything else. You know, it works in the context of all the other instruments. It cuts through and does the job. And you know, what you're left with seems like a bass centered instrument kind of thing, but it's because all the other stuff is there that we can now use the fundamental part, which is the bass.
Sure. And the bass is most likely not the quote-unquote star of the arrangement, and that's not a bad thing, but most of the time in rock, the first thing people hear is the vocals and the guitars, and the bassist's job is to make them sound as big and powerful as possible. So that's not less important. It's just a different role. You're not in the spotlight. You're not the one that's up front all the time, and everybody else has to go around that. But it's the other way around. You want to have a great, awesome guitar riff or a great vocal line or a great groove or whatever, and the bass is there to support that and to make it sound as big as possible. So you have to find the spots where everything else is lacking and fill it in with the bass and support everything. So again, you might not be in the spotlight, but you're not any less important, because without you as the bass player, the other stuff won't sound as great.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, and there's still, even if you're just playing like the roots, there's still decisions to be made. Like we said, are you going to use a pick or not? If you have a pick, where are you picking? Like where you move your pick along the string changes how it sounds dramatically, how you attack it, how hard you hit it. If you're going to play the same note, even the same octave, like an open A string versus the fifth fret, on the low E string, it's the same note, same octave, but they sound totally different. And one's going to be the right choice for the song, and it's going to reinforce those guitars differently or the kick drum differently.
Sure. And maybe one last word of encouragement here. If you are able to implement all of that and develop a great playing technique as well and stuff, so if you are really becoming a really great bass player, you will probably not have issues finding a gig, finding a job, because there are not so many bass players out there that are really, really great. Many of them are just, as I said, guitar players playing bass. But I think it's very, very hard to find a really great bass player. It's much harder to find a great bass player than it is to find a decent guitar player. So if you can make yourself known as a really, really great bass player, you're probably gonna have a job.
Yeah. And what studio guys like us to consider a great bass player is not the guy that can play really fast and do all these crazy things. It's all how they can record, how in tune they can play, how consistent their tone is. The average bass player could play the same riff twice and I could think it's a different person playing it each time because they're just so inconsistent. It's like, oh my God. Where a great one, you know, it's like fat. It sounds like really consistent. It's the tone. Like the tone is in the hands of a bass player to such a huge degree. It's amazing.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. If you want to learn more about the whole topic of low end, and part of it is bass, then I have an article on my website on theselfrecordingband.com. If you go to theselfrecordingband.com/low end, there is an article called How to Get Your Low End Right Before Mixing. And it describes the whole low end problem. It describes what low end is actually, the role of the bass and the role of the kick drum and their relationship, the whole fundamental and harmonics thing. Basically, everything we explained now is there, along with some pictures to make it easier to understand. I think you should check that out to learn more if you're into that. So go to theselfrecordingband.com/low end and you'll find more on that topic. So Malcolm, I hope you're going to get songs to master in the future that have less low-end problems So, yeah. Because that's, I guess that's one of the main things you will have to tackle in mastering, the consistent low end.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, totally. That's super funny.
So I hope this was helpful. I hope you got some value out of this. And as always, let us know. And if you have some great tips and techniques, or you came across something that you have used to make your bass cut through more, or something that on along those lines, just let us know. We're curious. We always want to learn ourselves. So
totally, hit us up. Totally. And yeah, another little exercise for you too is, like, we've probably never made people think about bass. Like, they've probably never thought about bass that much. You know, it's not something somebody listens to a song and is like, listen to that bass tone. It just doesn't really happen. So, but now do it. Go find your favorite songs and, like, analyze what's going on there and see if you notice anything new.
Oh, yeah. Sure. And maybe we just can't finish. It's something we can't do in this. We always come up with additional things after we thought we would finish the episode. But do what Malcolm just said. Listen to songs and maybe try listening to songs on smaller systems like laptops and mm-hmm. phones, and see if you can hear the bass, because then you might understand easier what we want to say here. So, yeah, just pick a couple of songs, good ones and bad ones maybe, or mixes that you think are good or bad or whatever, and just listen to them on, and maybe compare them to your own recordings, and listen on your laptop or phone speakers, and then see if you can still hear the bass or not, and see how those other productions are doing it. And yeah, that's a great exercise, actually. Or open your DAW if you have one, your software maybe, and just put a low cut there at 100 or 150 or 200 or something, and then see if you still hear the bass or if it's gone.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Okay, all right. So that's it for this episode. What are we going to talk about next week, Malcolm?
I think we're going to be talking about understanding all the little buttons and doodads on your microphones and interfaces, so you guys actually knew what you're doing with those.
Oh yeah, that's also going to be a great one. A lot of you guys requested that, because there's a lot of confusion and about out there.
Totally. And even for folks that like think they've got that on wrap, I would recommend just listening in, because there's probably some cool uses for those that you're not even taking advantage of yet. So tune in next week.
All right. Take care. Okay. Thanks for listening.
Take care. Bye.
Hey friend, thanks again for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed this one, just know that this is just a tiny fraction, a small taste of what we can actually do to help you completely transform your recordings and mixes forever. If you are really serious about your music, if you want to reach your goals as a self-recording artist, then please apply now for the Self-Recording Syndicate, our coaching program that takes you from where you are to being able to completely independently produce and release exciting sounding music forever. If you join that program, you're going to be part of a very, very passionate, dedicated, committed group of self-recording artists from all around the world, and you're going to get a roadmap, guidance, feedback, personal access to me and the team. We're going to do everything, literally everything we can, to help you make the best recordings you can possibly make. And it all starts with a free first call, completely free, no strings attached. Best case scenario, we're going to end up working together and we're going to completely transform the way your music sounds. Worst case scenario, you're going to get an hour of free coaching and an action plan that you can then take and implement on your own. So if that sounds interesting to you, get started now with your first completely free call by going to theselfrecordingband.com/call, or just click the link in the show notes. See you next week.